Hello, everyone, and welcome to Stutter Talk. My name is Chris Constantino. I'm a person who stutters and a speech-language pathologist at Florida State University. Today, I'm here with Dominique Kennedy. Dominique is a speech-language pathologist who works in private practice in the Atlanta metro area. Dominique recently wrote a book called Stuttering, It's What You Think, for parents and for professionals who are working with or have a child who stutters. Thanks for coming on the podcast, Dominique.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris.
Yeah, so we were introduced through a mutual friend of ours, and you shared your book with me, and I was excited to have you come on and tell us about it. So can you tell us a little bit about the inspiration behind your book?
Certainly. So inspiration-wise, the book was brought about specifically due to my own personal experiences with speech and communication skills, as well as experiences that I've had in working with and interacting with different families and individuals at my private practice.
Okay. How did you come up with the title?
You know, it's changed a few times, Chris. Initially, it was more scholarly and more deep. However, I wanted to make certain that families and individuals and parents especially were able to relate. So, and just brainstorming and pondering and just allowing creativity to flow, it just, you know, was able to be captured as Stuttering, It's What You Think. And also, it's basically an opportunity for, or testament to the fact that individuals who stutter, or you know, people who have different communication differences, how you feel about it, how you treat it, is really based on what you choose to believe about it. It's based on your belief system, based on how you choose to approach communication. So I wanted to make sure I was respecting, but also honoring and acknowledging it's still a personal decision.
Right. And I think that agency that you wish to convey comes across very clearly in the book. And actually, something that I found interesting was that you never really tell the reader, which would probably be either a parent or a speech language pathologist, how to make the child fluent, right? You know, you don't even really deal with fluency, yet you insist that the person reading the book isn't helpless. And I think this is one of the most important points that you make. I think too often both parents and therapists equate helping with fluency. And so can you speak more about sort of that idea that we have a lot of power in shaping our experiences based on our thought processes, regardless of how our speech is?
Certainly. I thank you for bringing that point up. In writing the book, it was my goal to be certain that I both educated and empowered families and professionals, making certain that I acknowledge that your mindset and the way in which you choose to approach communication skills is very much individual. So with that, and, you know, having been able to work with different individuals at my private office and just across settings, you know, each particular person's responsiveness to treatment, or their buy-in even to different treatment approaches or interventions, is very much specific to how that person chooses to approach it, what works best for them. So I wanted to not shy away from specific techniques and strategies, but more so address the part that you have to get to, the social, emotional piece, the mindset part that is necessary in order to even get to the intervention stage.
Right. Tell me more about mindset and why it's important.
You know, I'm a big proponent and believer in our words having power and being very intentional about word choice and intentional and purposeful about how we choose to communicate and deliver and present ourselves. So in thinking about mindset specifically, how we choose to think about ourselves individually, whether it be our communication skills, whether it be our abilities, talents, gifting, skill sets, those particular areas to me are very much shaped by our thought process. So with that, I believe that how you think about something tends to lend itself to how you approach it, maybe even how it influences your behaviors and your decisions.
I think your intuition about sort of the importance of cognitive change often plays out in the research on stuttering, that physical changes in speech that are made in the absence of cognitive or emotional changes are often temporary, right? Like you can make pretty drastic changes in your fluency using fluency shaping techniques. But if you haven't made any underlying changes in how you feel about your stuttering, often those changes are temporary.
Yes.
But making those underlying cognitive switches tends to make whatever physical changes you make more permanent.
I would agree with that point, Chris. Thank you for bringing that up. And just in adding to what you shared, much of what I have encountered either in my private practice or interacting with families in the stuttering community or even just through social media outlets and the stories that are brought up and the experiences that are shared, that particular social emotional piece and how one processes their thoughts about their own speech, it comes up a lot. And I know that at least from what I've experienced of other people and stories that have been shared with me, and again, even my own personal experience with speech and communication skills, that is very much a heavy influencer as to, or even a predictor at sometimes of the communicative outcomes in some cases.
Right. I would agree with that too. You've mentioned your own communication struggles. Can you elaborate for us what those were?
Sure. So, in growing up, honestly, and even into adulthood, I experienced a great deal of anxiety and even just physical manifestations of tension and different things as it relates to speaking, more specifically in public speaking situations. So I was very much an active person or child. I was very much involved in different honor societies and clubs and extracurriculars, but even in being a pretty proficient student, I dealt with a lot of personal challenges, more so internalizing a lot of those things as it relates to when it was time for a class discussion or open conversation or class presentation. Anytime I had to stand in front of a group of people, it always gave me a lot of anxiety to the point of even provoking a panic attack. So that particular experience itself, you know, just created a lot of fear. And again, talking about the thought processes, the thoughts that I had about when I would have to do a speech for a class or what I had to do to prepare myself for even being comfortable and confident and standing in front of a group of people, it was very much a challenging time. for me. So that's certainly a part of my personal story.
In your book, at the start of your first chapter, you have a personal story about a time you were speaking in front of your class. And I found it very evocative and powerful, and I was hoping you could read it for us.
Sure, sure. And this is actually, it is a personal story. It's very much indicative, or it captures the overall experience. It wasn't just one time, it was the overall feeling of it. And I'd be happy to share that with you. Beginning with, I dreaded hearing my name called in class, only to be left standing, vulnerable and exposed. The mere thought of it brought to me so much fear and anxiety. I hated the feeling that I always got in the pit of my stomach when I had to say something out loud in front of a group of people, especially when my words were unplanned and unrehearsed. Rather than the fight or flight response that some people get, the fear itself rendered me frozen and foggy. I was unable to collect my thoughts or piece together what I wanted to say. I stood alone, feeling humiliated, without anyone to rescue me or help string together the unraveling thoughts and words inside of my head. I was rendered speechless, with only a cascading mess of ums and uhs to shuffle through. The mental replay of stumbling over my words nearly jolted me into a panic attack. Mostly, I hated not being able to share freely, the one thing that I wished I could have control over, when it mattered most, my words. They must think I'm slow or incapable or standing up to the challenge, or worse, they must think I'm a fraud. Sure, my grades were excellent. In fact, I never saw my first C until after I graduated from high school with honors. But what good are superior grades without a strong voice to back them? What good is it to be in the top 10% of your class if you can't even deliver a simple speech? That was a thought that regularly flooded my head. I'd reasoned that I couldn't just be great on paper and a failure in front of everyone. Honestly, it was mortifying, a mortifying feeling that I can still feel the sting of when I allow my mind to go back to those dreadful times. Times where I felt like my voice was literally being choked out of me by fear. Times of trembling and sweating through class presentations, but mostly times of feeling like a defeated failure. Instead of compassion and understanding, I got the familiar look of pity. I could always see it in their eyes, at least the ones that stayed around long enough to watch me fumble over my broken words. It would always start with a rhythmic head nod, almost willing the words to come into alignment. Their eyes would shift with discomfort, straining not to look away too often, but painstakingly listening in search of some glimmer of hope that I would somehow eventually get through the disastrous delivery of a speech. Lastly came the look of sympathy, as I finally figured out how to struggle to close out that terrifying talk. During those times, I desperately wanted to mop up the mess I'd made of my words and scurry to my seat, attempting with all my might to smile through sullen eyes, sulken shoulders, and a sulky mood.
Thank you, Dominique. I think what I like so much about that passage is that people who stutter could find it so relatable. So in fact, when I read your book and I read through that passage, I assumed you were describing the experience of stuttering. It was so is much like the experience of stuttering.
Yeah, I think with that point, and I was definitely sharing a personal experience, but I noticed that even sharing with my co-author, he also had the same response. And I find that very interesting, but also enlightening that even a personal experience and that of someone who has maybe a different walk or different challenge could still be somehow related in some way, you know, connected in some way from a standpoint of the experience or the feelings that can be had in that particular situation. So thank you for making that point.
Yeah, I find it encouraging because I think that people who stutter often assume that if you don't stutter, it's impossible for you to understand the experience, right? That this is a unique and special experience and that fluent people can't possibly understand it. And then you write about an experience that you have had as a fluent person, and it's almost exactly like a stuttered experience. Wow. And I think it's encouraging that we can relate to each other, especially given that most speech therapists aren't stutterers. The idea that we can communicate these subjective and personal experiences, I think, is encouraging.
I agree. I'm very much wanting to make sure I convey. I typically take the approach of just empathy and knowledge. And because I weigh very heavily in on just emotional intelligence and understanding people, I definitely wanted to make sure that was reflected. But also, you know, I can't share with someone what they can do and reset their mind or how they can approach things if I'm not able to be open and vulnerable and transparent about my own experiences. So that was my goal as well.
Do you think your experiences with speaking influenced your choice of career?
Very much so. And, you know, it's funny when people ask me, how did you even decide to become a speech language pathologist? And, you know, I've tried to work on the very succinct elevator speech of it. But honestly, this particular experience, the fact that I have a twin sister and, you know, when we were younger, she was even more quiet than myself. So I served as like the mouthpiece, as I like to say, for each of us. Just encountering other people in different stages of my life, even having been introduced to the field of speech language pathology by a person who identifies himself as a person who stutters. He was in a program at Florida State University where I got my degree. Just meeting him casually and learning about the field, I feel like there's so many different little pieces of my life that add up to and directed themselves to me choosing speech language pathology as a career path.
Once you picked that career path, how did you then get further interested in stuttering specifically?
To be honest with you, Dr. Lisa Scott was very instrumental in having made that decision about really diving deeper into the areas of fluency and stuttering. I remember many things about college, but I remember most the courses that she taught in fluency and counseling and the experience that she shared with us, experiences that she would share with us in the class, and just her transparency, her vulnerability, and just that counseling piece was always very much a part that I was both intrigued by but enjoy. So it really started, it was a pivotal point from there. And then afterwards, being able to work with families and children in the schools and work with families and children in early intervention, even in private practice, all those different pieces just continue to fuel and feed that interest. And then just having decided to just really dig a little deeper, especially what I most like about fluency is the social emotional piece that you can really just kind of dig deeper with when it comes to each individual person's story and their own lived experiences. That's very much a part of why I am drawn to the areas of fluency and stuttering.
Yeah, I always try to convey to my students that stuttering can be a lot of fun. From the therapist perspective, mm-hmm. I think a lot of times speech therapists are intimidated working with people who stutter, especially because stuttering often doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. And so I think, as we talked about earlier, if you're equating success with fluency, you can feel like you're not helping. But there's so much you can do to be helpful.
I agree. And the other point I wanted to add to what you shared, I think oftentimes as clinicians or speech language pathologists, we are uncomfortable with the voluntary stuttering or demonstration of certain techniques in order to either pinpoint a certain skill or relate to the client that we're working with. I think it's sometimes just uncomfortable to even do it, whether it be someone feels as though it's offensive or maybe wanting to honor that individual and not try to relate too much to where you're trying to take on their experience. But I can certainly respect and understand that it's something that is fun for me, but maybe oftentimes shied away from in other respects.
Yeah, I do think, though, that discomfort, though, is part of being in solidarity with the person who you're working with, right? Because mm-hmm. they're often also uncomfortable stuttering, right? So it's a way of sharing in that experience with them.
Exactly.
Did your own communication troubles ever reach the point where you considered speech therapy or anything like that? Was it ever the point of being, were you ever referred for that?
I was never referred, Chris, and honestly, I hid it pretty well. I internalized a lot to the point where during this book, I spoke to my mother about, you know, just more about my experience, because I hadn't really shared it to this degree, or I've, you know, been very intimate settings. But I believe in having the experience and making it personal, but internalizing a lot, it was one that I believe I just kind of took on myself. I just either tried to avoid as much as possible, or I, you know, tried to just push through the talks that I described in that first chapter, or I just sat, you know, with the feelings of defeat and failure and just accepted, well, I guess this may just be how I will communicate. So I'll just forge on, but just understand that that's just the way it's going to be. But as an adult and having to do more communicatively and do more voluntarily and just wanting to push past that particular fear of it, it wasn't so much that I needed to be the most proficient and best speaker in the world, but I wanted to no longer have the fear of or anxiety attached to the speaking experience. So I did consider some things in grad school specifically, but I continued to just do a lot of interpersonal work and pursue some things on my own. And, you know, as I worked through my different graduate studies and continue to just position myself and challenge myself to just address that more on a personal level.
Did your journey with your own struggles influence how you do therapy?
I believe it does. I'm very much mindful of making certain that I do in some way connect with my clients, not trying to be too familiar or, you know, buddy-buddy, so to speak, but I do feel as though having had my own personal experiences makes me more sensitive. It allows me to, tap into that empathy more so. And it helps me to better understand maybe if they are having this particular challenge and either connecting with the concept or willingness to try a certain strategy, it makes me more aware of what they may be experiencing internally themselves and what hurdles they may need to overcome to get to the place of more formally addressing the particular strategy or technique. So it does certainly make me more sensitive and much more understanding, I believe.
I was wondering if that was part of your reason for having such a focus on mindset.
It is. I believe in just having decided to really dig deep within myself and address things on a personal level. A lot of that took reflection. A lot of it took introspection. A lot of it was very much no longer internalizing the experience, but actually actively, resetting my mind, readjusting my thoughts, and being willing to move forward in a way that would allow me to see myself from a different perspective versus the failure I felt whenever it came to having to deliver a speech or having to speak in front of a large group of people.
Right. I think that reframing of what it means to be a failure or success in any communication exchange is really important. I think it's so easy to see success in terms of was I able to pass as fluent, right? If I'm a person who stutters, or maybe in your case, did I speak the way I had preconceived that I would?
Right.
But we hold ourselves up to standards that aren't really fair to ourselves, right? If I'm a person who stutters, I shouldn't expect to be fluent all the time. And so I'm setting myself up to see myself as a failure if I'm doing that.
I agree. And I've always been a high achiever. So I had very high expectations and set the bar pretty high. And, I used to rehearse in order to avoid stumbling or avoid having a particular way in which I might not convey my point clearly or concisely enough. So I would literally rehearse and rehearse. And even before a speech in college or, a particular speaking setting, I would literally go into the hallway and just over and over and over, just try to rehearse and say that particular point over and over, hoping that it would stick enough to just be delivered in that way. And when it was not, if I stumbled on a word or if I said something out of the order that I rehearsed, it was very difficult for me to recover personally. It probably showed up less so outwardly to maybe other people, but internally I beat myself up a lot about, man, that was really not great, or you really could have done better at that, or that didn't make any sense. So having to reset my thoughts and reframe, as you said, how I perceived myself as a communicator was really one of the biggest pieces of getting to a place of no longer having to rehearse my speeches, but being free enough to trust my thoughts, to trust that what I have to say is valuable and can be delivered clearly enough to make sense to the listener. Once I got over that part, I was able to be, much more free in my communication skills.
Yeah, it's interesting how much that parallels maybe the experience that somebody might have in therapy, where I think when somebody's able to get rid of those crutches, right, that need to rehearse, that's a big sign of therapeutic progress.
Right.
Right, when they can step up to a speech and give it, having not stressed out about it for 2 hours before, right?
Very stressful.
And just sort of, yeah. In your book, something else you make a big deal about or that you talk a lot about as important, especially when it comes to parents, is patience. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit more about why patience is so important?
Sure. Well, I kind of, Chris, pride myself on being an exceptionally patient person. You know, definitely there are, certainly in having my own two daughters, many teachable moments and many growing opportunities in that particular area. But nonetheless, I do consider myself very patient. And I think in writing about that in the book, I wanted to give parents an opportunity to first be patient with themselves, because I find that in my encounters with parents who have children who stutter, there's this helplessness sometimes. There's this, you know, strong desire, of course, to just, as any parent, you want the best for your child, but you, because this fluency or stuttering, you don't always know when it's going to come up. You may know certain words that are your triggers, or you may know certain phrases that you may try to avoid, but in general, it could happen. One situation to the next can be very different. So for parents, I've noticed, even in the clinic, you know, a child may, you know, have their best speech session or have very few disfluencies during the session. And as soon as they hit the door, meeting again with their parents, they're back into sometimes their similar or habitual pattern. And, you know, that can be very challenging for a parent to accept and understand that every communication situation is going to bring something different. You certainly have to be patient with yourself, patient with your child. You know, a lot of times families are like, they'll ask, you know, what can I do to help accelerate the process? Or what can we be doing more of at home to just really make sure that my child, you know, no longer has this as a difficulty or challenge? And, you know, having to have the difficult conversation with families that, you know, this may be something that is long term. So how you choose to think about that is, you know, going to certainly help you to better approach it. But the patience of understanding that your child is likely doing the best they can or what they know to do in that time, you are likely as a parent doing what you know to do and the best you can as to, you know, supporting through reminders or supporting by just being present or supporting by, you know, participating in communities or therapy, you're doing the best you can more times than not. So being patient with yourself is first, and then also being patient with the child and understanding that they're working hard, you're working on some things, you guys both have a collective goal, but it's important to not rush the process.
I really liked your focus on the parents being patient with themselves. Mm-hmm. I think often parents not blaming themselves for not helping quick enough or that kind mm-hmm. of thing. It's also parents being patient when they respond to this, to stuttering in a way that they wish they had not. Right. Mm-hmm. So in your book, you talk about if sometimes you're going to accidentally rush your child or you're going to accidentally interrupt them when they're stuttering. And, you know, you're only human, right? Like you have to be patient with those mistakes also.
Right. Right. And even as a parent myself, you know, again, I have two young daughters. My husband and I have two young daughters, and I don't have every day is not my best parenting moment, you know, throughout the day. I tend to, you know, intend to be very mindful and put to practice all the things I know about parenting and communication and, you know, think about what I would do in this situation and how to process it. But there's a lot of different factors that come into play. You know, there are personal things we all experience, or maybe stressors in that day, or maybe the situation or environment was just not conducive to a certain thing. So I believe in being a parent and understanding all the different things that go into parenting and guiding your child or children, it helps to relate in a way of, hey, that probably wasn't your most proud parenting moment, but understand that you have opportunities to continue to build. You have opportunities to continue to, you know, advance, you know, and move forward in building that relationship with your child or continuing that, you know, positive interaction with your child. So again, that patience factor is just overall in parenting, but certainly for parents of children who stutter as well.
Right. I think those are all wonderful messages. Mm-hmm. If there are any parents listening or speech therapists listening who are interested in getting a copy of your book, what is the best way for them to do that when it comes out?
Certainly. It will be available through Amazon beginning for pre-order on this Sunday, April 26th. So definitely feel free to log in to Amazon and access that material that way. I would love to have, you know, the support of parents and professionals, even caregivers. This is a book for and directed to parents, but it's certainly something that can benefit caregivers, benefit professionals who also work with children who stutter. If you're a camp leader or a coach or any capacity. And honestly, there are lots of people that just don't know much about stuttering. They've never spoken to someone who stutters. They've never interacted with a person who stutters. And just wanting to get a better understanding of the intricacies and the delicacies and the just aspects of everything that goes along with and into being a person who stutters or interacting with a person who stutters. It's definitely educational material in that regard as well. So certainly it's going to be available through Amazon. And you're also welcome to go on my website. It's just my first name, lastname.com. So DominiqueKennedy.com. And you'll be able to access the information there as well.
All right, great. And we'll put a link to that website up on the page for this podcast. Awesome. So people can click on it that way too.
Awesome.
Well, thank you for coming on today, Dominique. I enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you, Chris, for having me. I enjoyed it as well.